enforcement action to address the issue of wildlife feedings on campus and throughout the city of Burnaby. To learn more about the bylaw, as well as what this proposed enforcement may look like, CJSF spoke with Tiana Selleck, the Fur Bearers Wildlife Campaigns and Advocacy Manager, on how this bylaw proposal came to be.
So this is something that both the Fur Bearers and SFU itself are really behind. The university has let us know they've received over 100 complaints in the past 2 years about people feeding raccoons on campus. Our organization has also had community members reach out to us for support. Like you mentioned, lots of students on campus who are encountering wildlife, witnessing feeding events. And then there have also been unfortunate incidents nearby, like the black bear that was killed near SFU in September after becoming food conditioned. So these are all really clear examples of how feeding creates problems. So by supporting our call for a municipal bylaw, SFU is essentially recognizing the importance of equipping the city with a necessary mechanism to help them address the issue.
Next, we asked what they hope this bylaw is able to accomplish.
So the goal here really is to change behavior. Typically, enforcement starts with education-based warnings. So giving people a chance to understand why feeding wildlife is harmful and adjust their actions accordingly. And what we hope is that once people understand that feeding of wildlife does pose risks and harms these animals long term, we're hoping that the behavior changes. But if it continues, the bylaw would give officers the ability to issue tickets as a deterrent to stop that behavior before it escalates into a bigger issue like we saw with that bear. So right now the city is relying on education alone, and it hasn't been successful in solving the problem. So this next step of enforcement is essentially just providing a necessary tool to shift that behavior in a way that will protect both the community and the wildlife within it.
Afterwards, we discuss what some of the negative effects are when it comes to feeding wildlife, whether it be on SFU's Burnaby campus or throughout the city.
So the biggest thing is feeding wildlife, whether that's directly or indirectly by leaving food out. It's teaching these animals to rely on people for food. They're also losing their natural and frankly necessary caution of us, which can lead them to bolder and riskier behavior, such as approaching people for food in the future, approaching people's homes, that sort of thing. Additionally, other wildlife may be drawn into the area, resulting in overcrowding. Like you mentioned, lots of wildlife on the campus. Also increased disease transmission from us to them and vice versa. And ultimately a higher likelihood of negative human-wildlife encounters that unfortunately often end fatally for the animals involved. So it's just, it's unsafe for both people and wildlife long-term.
At the end of our conversation, Tiana Selleck left us with this piece of advice.
So we understand that the intention often comes from a good place, and feeding wildlife might feel like it's helping, but it really does harm animals. It's putting them at risk of injury, malnutrition, disease, and ultimately being destroyed. So true compassion means doing what's best for the animal long term, and the best way to care for wildlife is to let them stay wild. So what people can do that will make a really big difference is giving wildlife their space, not leaving food unattended on campus or in parks, properly storing away their garbage and their compost, and removing any attractants like pet food or bird feeders, that sort of thing. So really important not to feed them intentionally or unintentionally and to allow them to stay wild. And what we would really encourage people to do is continue to enjoy wildlife, but in a way that's compassionate and respectful. So this could be things like birding, volunteering with local rescues, engaging in citizen science initiatives, and supporting wildlife-friendly policies. So lots of great ways to enjoy wildlife that ensure safe coexistence for us and for them down the line.
Once again, that was our conversation with Tiana Selleck, the Wildlife Campaigns and Advocacy Manager for the Fur Bearers, who are currently advocating for a wildlife feeding bylaw in the city of Burnaby. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM.
You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, preliminary data from the Smithers RCMP has shown a slight decline in property crime and shoplifting in Smithers just this past year. Several prolific offenders have been taken off the streets, which, according to local RCMP, was the biggest contributor to the decline in statistics. When comparing only shoplifting calls over the past 4 years, January to September 2025 accounts for 12%, down from 45% last year. And when comparing only offenses against property over the past 4 years, January to September 2025 accounts for only 17% of crime, down 28% since 2024. Constable Jocelyn Foydart is the media relations officer with the Smithers RCMP, and we speak with her today about this recent decline in statistics and what it means for local community safety. Stay with us.
My name is Constable Jocelyn Foydart, and I am both a police officer in Smithers as well as a registered social worker at the Smithers Detachment.
Great, Jocelyn. Thanks so much for being with us on CICK News. Wanted to touch base, as I mentioned, because we are seeing some preliminary data showing a decline in some crime in Smithers here, property crime and shoplifting in 2025. So maybe you could just walk us through some of the information that the RCMP just put out.
For sure. So we wanted to put this out because we know that our statistics in 2024 were very high, and we are seeing a decline in 2025. And the simplest way to explain this would be that in 2024, our shoplifting and our property crime statistics were driven by a very small number of people, probably two or three people, who were these like prolific type offenders in the community who were doing the majority of these crimes. So we got some additional funding from the province in 2024, where we were able to do enhanced patrols and, you know, work with business owners and work with Crown Council. And we were able to work with our justice partners. And these prolific offenders were held accountable for their actions and are no longer in Smithers. So that has really driven down our property statistics in 2025. And it shows the impact of what a very small number of people can do to our statistics when they keep doing repeat offenses.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, this is obviously in small towns right across Canada, you know, we're seeing and have seen spikes in this type of crime, you know, not necessarily really violent crime, but this kind of petty crime, property break-ins, shoplifting. And I wonder, you know, you mentioned the numbers, it's a small number of people that have been removed from the street. Have these people, you know, been arrested and are now in prison because of repeat offenses? And also, you know, what kind of numbers are we talking here?
There was probably 2 to 3 people who were responsible for the majority of the property crime and shoplifting calls in 2024 that drove our statistics really, really high. So because we had business owners calling in and community members calling in complaints, we were able to create a paper trail. And then we worked with our Crown Council, and we were successful in charging these folks. And we were also successful in showing the courts the impact that they were having on our community. And there are 2 individuals now who are actually not allowed back to our community because of the impact that they had.
I see. And how does that work in a policing sense? Like if these people show up in town, they're arrested, like how do we make sure that these types of folks stay away from these types of communities?
I think what people need to remember is they need to call in complaints. They need to call in the shoplifting complaints. They need to call in property-related crimes, you know, mischief-related crimes. I think some of the comments I've been getting recently have to do with people telling me that, hey, we're just not calling the police anymore because we're not seeing perpetrators held accountable. And that's something that I'm really trying to get out there to business owners and community, that they really do need to keep calling in these crimes if they're witnesses to them. And that's really important for us because that is what creates, you know, the call volume and the paper trail that we need to show the justice system, you know, the volume of calls that we're having. And I also think it's really important that people know that this data is preliminary, so it could change. If we have an individual or one or two individuals who roll into the community in the next couple of months and we start seeing an increase in, you know, our theft under calls or our shoplifting calls, then we will start to see those statistics rise again. So it can ebb and flow, and that this is really important for people to realize that one or two people can really affect statistics.
Yeah. Jocelyn, maybe you could walk us through, what are the statistics that we're looking at? What was, you know, looking at the graph here, and clearly there was a bit of a, I guess a trend from 2022, 23, and then it spiked in 24, and now it seems to have come down even below the levels from 2022. So maybe walk us through, what are we actually seeing year over year in terms of this decline?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is really a coordinated effort. So there's a lot of different pieces to this that are driving the statistics down. So we did talk about like the prolific offenders and repeat offenses and what happens when we're able to, you know, work with those individuals and our justice partners. And once they've been removed from the situation, from an enforcement perspective, then we see those drive down. But what we're not seeing in here that's also played a part of this is the work of the situation table, which, you know, has been really active over, you know, specifically over the last year, was trying to address some of the root causes of crime. So when we talk about like poverty, you know, unemployment, those kinds of things, if we're able to support people through our partner agencies to address food, clothing, you know, social services, health, has also contributed to a decline in our statistics because vulnerable folks have the services they need to be healthy, so therefore don't come into contact with police. So that's also a part of the reason why those statistics are dropping down.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure some of our listeners are, you know, fully aware that, you know, oftentimes bikes go missing from yards, you know, yard equipment. You know, I personally have seen a tool go missing from my yard, you know, all over quite a long span of time. A lot of people I know, their first thought is, well, go check the homeless encampment. And sometimes they're successful and sometimes they're not. How prevalent, you know, due to these statistics, you know, is crime coming from, you know, places like the homeless encampment, or are these more, as you mentioned, outside forces coming into the community and causing this disruption?
Well, I think it could be a combination of both. I think what we've recently saw happen was, I put out a media release a little while ago where we executed a search warrant at a residence in Smithers, where we located stolen property. So that's why it's really important for people to phone in the things that have gotten stolen from them, because that creates a file for us at the detachment. And then when we locate stolen property, whether that's at a home or at the overnight sheltering area or somewhere else in the community, then we can find the rightful owner of that property. So it's not necessarily happening in one place. And that is an example of us finding stolen property at a residence and being able to give it back to people because they've reported it stolen.
You know, I know you've mentioned it, you know, a few times there, people, you know, to be vigilant, businesses, especially if, you know, if something's happening, call it in, you know, start the paper trail, you know, file a report. But what other advice would you have for community members who, you know, may be feeling uneasy about, you know, seeing some of these statistics, regardless of the decline, but still, you know, seeing that the trend is up from, you know, historical numbers? What would you advise, or what other suggestions would you give to folks to feel, you know, safer, or how can they be more vigilant in their community?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think reporting their concerns to police are really important. I think what I really want community to know is that, like, preliminarily and right now, shoplifting and property calls are down because of very strong partnerships and consistent reporting. At the same time, I really understand community's concerns, because a large part of what we do involves social challenges, not crime. And people are seeing a lot of homelessness and they're seeing a lot of addictions. And, you know, these aren't crimes, but they do impact community safety. And that's why we're trying to work really hard with the town and Crown Council and health and social services, because we really need to layer the resources. Once we layer the resources, we're really able to keep Smithers safe.
All right, Jocelyn, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for your time and giving us your insight and report on this. Very much appreciated.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
That's it for this week's Scoop. Catch us next week, Thursdays at 12 p.m. in Smithers, Thursdays at 4 p.m. in Burnaby, Fridays at 8 a.m. in Nanaimo, and weekdays at 7:30 in Prince George. The Scoop was made possible by funding from the Canadian government and the Local Journalism Initiative, a Community Radio Fund of Canada initiative.
Listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia. to CJSF 90.1 FM. Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
Good day.